Flipping Ball on episode 11 of Flippers Always Win. I'm your host, Flip. Thank you so much for tuning in. We have another great jam-packed episode. Before we get there, there's seven people left in the game. And this is the order in which they are going to be leaving the game. You ready? Next episode, Genevieve. Leaving at final six. This is where it gets a little tricky. Because I do think that if Rachel gets to five, she's got that idol. She's going to play it on herself, right? And then all she has to do is just either win immunity or fire. And she gets to the final three and she wins. But that goes against my winner pick. For those who have listened for a bit now, you know who that is. So that puts me into a tricky situation on sixth place specifically. Rachel also has a block of vote. So she's got some advantages in her back pocket. I'm going to say at six is when Sam goes. So Genevieve and Sam, we're down to the final five. Rachel's got the idol. She's going to be safe. Sue's got an idol. She's going to be safe. I think Teeny goes at five. We see from this past episode, Andy's not seen as much of a threat to win. And Sue apparently also, at least some people feel as though, will be quote unquote shepherded to the end here. Teeny, I think, is one of the bigger social threats left at five with Rachel safe. We get to final four. We've got Rachel, Sue, Caroline, Andy left. Rachel's not winning immunity. I think Sue wins immunity. She's taking Caroline with her. So that leaves Andy against Rachel in fire, which makes a lot of sense now that I'm saying it out loud because they've had this whole arc, this whole season of them either not being together at first, being together again. Are they working together? Are they not? So it all comes to a head. And it would be so ironic for Andy, who hasn't been able to do a damn thing in competitions this whole season, for him to make fire and take Rachel out of this game when all she has to do is make that fire and win. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen. Andy wins fire. It's a final three of Andy, Sue, and Caroline. And I think from there, Sue takes it. I don't think Andy has a chance. I'm off that train after this past episode. You'll hear why in my conversation coming up. So I think it really comes down to Sue and Caroline. And I think Sue has a better argument than Caroline to this jury about, you know, playing an honest game, being straight up. Gabe being on that jury, he, I think, will favor Sue. Sue, outside of the Kyle situation, doesn't really have any enemies. Will she have played the greatest strategic game in Survivor history? No, she won't have. But I'm not sure that Caroline's game will be overt enough for her to be able to overcome Sue's loyalty and fighting story. The 58-year-old woman who maybe she'll say she's 45, maybe she'll say she's 58, fighting for her daughter. I think that's going to be a really impactful story. And of an Andy, Caroline, and Sue final three, I think she takes it. So there you have it. That's my prediction for now. Will any of it be right? Will literally one player be in the actual placement that I predicted? 50-50 shot. 50-50 shot. I do think Caroline gets second place. I will say that. I think Andy's your zero vote third placer. I just can't see anybody actually voting for him. So Genevieve seventh, Sam sixth, Teeny fifth, Rachel fourth, Andy third, Caroline second, Sue Smay, still your winner pick after all this time. Got a great episode coming up. Tareen is here, and you'll hear from her after this message. Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. We have no sponsorships on this podcast, so in place of an ad, I would like to talk to you about a decision I made earlier tonight at the vending machine downstairs in our building. I got a bottle of Aquafina water, and I got a bottle of Coca-Cola Zero Sugar because I knew I was going to be up late editing this podcast. And I still needed hydration, though. And our water, our Brita, wasn't filled. I had to go fill it. And so it's not cold. And I'm too bougie, I guess, to just drink it at room temperature out of the faucet. Also, you need to clean it. That's the big part. That's why a Brita exists, is to filter it out. Silly me. So I got this water and this Coke Zero here. And I'm up, but I'm tired. Two beverages. They taste good, and you're not thirsty as much. right, welcome back to Flippers Always Win. With me today is Survivor superfan Tareen, who I know through my friend Gloria, who was on episode 5. It's been a minute since I've seen you, Tareen. It's been a minute since we've been at house parties or running around the Montgomery County Fairgrounds together, but it's good to see you. Thank you for coming on. How are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm great. Happy to have you here. When we were texting about you coming on, I just asked you, you know, like, what is your basic background with the show? And as it turns out, you gave a pretty similar answer to my own actual background. So why don't you take me and the listeners through your Survivor journey as a fan?
Yeah, I started watching Survivor way back when I was like super small, little kid, elementary school with my parents. I would go to swim practice, and like back then we didn't have DVR or anything like that, any streaming. So I'd like rush home from practice to like shower and everything to get in front of the TV on time. Always like a nice little bonding thing with me and my family. Got busier when I got older, kind of dropped off a bit. But after COVID, well, actually during COVID, and you know, everyone's just watching everything coming out, I was like, what else can I watch? What else can I like really get into that? I like kind of wanted a commitment because I didn't want to have to keep finding new things to watch. And my boyfriend was like, oh, have you ever watched Survivor? And it was such a like, oh my gosh, yes. Like I totally forgot about that part of my life. Like, let's do it. We didn't start at the beginning and watch it all the way through. We're like, well, let's like try one random one from the middle. And then we kind of like hopped around, and then eventually we're like, well, let's just get through all of them. And so we kind of went all over the place, but eventually got through all of them. And now we're watching them live.
If you remember, at what point during COVID did your boyfriend pop the question? You know, not that question, the bigger one, if so to speak.
I know. I agree. I'm like the more important one, probably the end of 2020, like around like November of 2020.
Do you remember which one was the one that you started with when you jumped right back in?
Honestly, I think I started with China. I was like, oh, this is so weird, because I always remembered an island type vibe. I'm actually really happy that they're in like just Fiji now. I used to like, ooh, where are they going to go this year? But I just think that maybe the environment wasn't like the best for like the Survivor game. But I always appreciate, especially a show that's gone on for this long, kind of just the development of the show. You know, you have to try new things, figure out if it works, if it doesn't work.
You're absolutely right. It's good to try things. That leads me to my final point of what you originally said, was that you actually like that they're in Fiji every season nowadays. And from what I can tell, overall, I would say that's a contrarian opinion in the Survivor fandom community these days. Doesn't mean it's wrong. I understand where you're coming from 100%, but I think more people than not want them to actually be going to different locations. So talk me through like why that's something that you appreciate.
So yeah, at first, actually, I was like, what? They're in Fiji again? I do kind of miss, you know, they're always in Fiji at the same time. Nice weather. It's beautiful. Whereas they used to have these torrential downpours in different areas, these rainforests. I did miss that at first, but I guess, you know, you kind of grow with it. In my mind, I was like, okay, that's one variable that I know is going to be Fiji. I get to focus on all of the social aspects now. I really like hone in on that. And it's not as much of like a variable, like where they are. And I mean, I think part of those older seasons where we did have the Aussies that are out fishing all the time, some of my favorite Survivor was when that was happening, but it's such a social game now, like in so many different aspects. I do feel like since that's the way the game is going, it's kind of nice to have a constant there in Fiji. We know that.
I would rather have it the way it is now than they go somewhere every year, but the social game lacks. So I'm 100% with you there. Obviously, there are budget cuts in the past few years. That's a big reason why the new era is what it is in a lot of ways. If they could go to one place that they haven't been to before, where would you want them to go?
That is a great question. Maybe somewhere in like South America.
They have only been to South America, I think, a couple times. I think Amazon and Tocantins.
You know, they have a little bit of that weather element. Just putting in a little bit of that Survivor quality of living off the land.
I've thought of three, since you said South America, possible locations. The Andes mountain range in Chile, Ecuador, because obviously it's in the equator. They could do, I feel like they could do some interesting early season stuff around it being the center of the earth. And then the third one, which definitely isn't happening, but would be really cool, would be the old camps at Jonestown.
Ooh.
They're not doing that one. They're absolutely not doing that one. Get down to Guyana. It would be their own version of Ghost Island, but for real, right?
That'd be cool. So when you first asked me that question, I'm like, how crazy would it be if they went somewhere cold, cold, cold? Naked and Afraid did a cold season. It was a shorter season, but that would be interesting.
No, you bring up a good point. They obviously haven't really tried that. This is jogging a memory when you said go to the cold. I had this dream like 6 months ago. They did back-to-back seasons of Survivor. And the first season of it was essentially like a regular season. The second season was a different cast. It was fully indoors. So like Big Brother, but it wasn't just a house. It was like a bigger compound with enough stuff to do challenges and like live in different spaces. But it was like a cold compound. Imagine like a giant igloo. I know it's warm and insulated in the inside, so I'm sorry. But you get the point. So yeah. Was that dream because I want them to go to a different location? I want something new. Like I'm getting a little bit bored with the same exact format. I would be interested to see the cold for sure. I would also be interested to see what they could do inside. I don't think people would enjoy it nearly as much. People would be very much like, this isn't what I signed up for. But the game is so good and the production is so good that I think they could pull it off.
Yeah, I don't think that people would like love being inside. I feel like that would put their mindset in like, okay, we're not surviving. We're like in a house. It's a reality show now. The cold. I wonder how it would impact the social structure, because when it's cold, I do feel that sometimes humans really do need to be like taking care of each other a little bit more, like just the winter months, right? Like we're all getting like a little bit more sick or sniffy. Oh, here's your soup and here's a blanket. We need to like cuddle up, work together to save the heat and save our warmth. Kind of really does bring back the caretaker type of character versus like a provider type of character. And I wonder like how that would shift the game in a way, because I mean, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of them are super, you know, uncomfortable, or they know what to expect. They've mentally prepared for, all right, yeah, we're not brushing our teeth. We're going to be doing toothpick. But whereas like for the cold, like you can prepare for the cold. It's still freaking cold.
No, you make a great point. And even in season one of Survivor where it's warm, you see that they bond together, but it's not necessarily about the elements. It's about the competition. Whereas what you're saying is, yeah, if it was in the cold, it would be people caring for each other. Game that out. How does that actually affect the game? The two things that stick out, and this is, again, an overgeneralization. I'm sure it would play out differently more often than not. Your big providers would be out there longer, and your motherly figures would be out there longer. I guess that creates its own divide. Because if you're a motherly figure, your function in a lot of ways is to care for people. So potentially maybe you're going to want to keep them around. But if you're a provider and you're looking out for the good of the survival of the tribe, maybe you find these people who aren't in either role as important. So maybe you're seeing more of a clash between two specific types of people, as opposed to everybody just kind of doing a free for all, depending on personality in a way.
Especially in this era where everyone's like trying to build their resumes and stuff, and they don't want to be overshadowed. And I do think that since that's the way the game's been going, if we did bring in like a cold season and we had these two characters, like, while yes, they are very useful, would all of those kind of like, you know, middle of the ground players who may not provide or care whatever as much, we got to like use them for another week or so, but then we got to get rid of them, right?
I think that they go, the providers go deeper into the game, like old Survivor.
Right. Yes.
It almost becomes, again, like to your original point, more like how it would really play out if it was true. Because these days, it's extremely hard for a true physical threat to go much past the beginning of the merge.
You know, and it makes me so sad because, unfortunately, like in my history of watching Survivor, like that is just who I'm drawn to. I'm like, yeah, like I'm so much for the competition. I'm like, that guy's so strong and he rocks. Or, you know, some of these women are just some of the things that they can do. I'm like, oh, I am not that strong at all. And like, I eat food every day. Like, oh my gosh. You know, I'm always rooting for those people. But yeah, they get out. And this past week has obviously shown that.
Julia feels the same way as you. She's drawn to rooting for the big challenge threats, the Aussies. Ultimately, it's a social game at the end of the day. And that's something I've always told her, especially in the early seasons we'd watch, where a lot of times when it gets down to a final two or final three, the social player wins over what we perceive as the most deserving player at home and a lot of the ones that we're watching. And she's upset about it. And I'm like, every right to be upset. But you got to remember, like, at the end of the day, this is about who do you want to win? Who made you feel the best out there? Sometimes it's the person who politically was the best rather than the person who really did provide for you, which inherently is a little unfair. And I think when you look at the new era, there haven't been a ton of physical threat providers who have won. There's been a couple who are more geared towards that than others. you could say that's a flaw in the game in a way, the way that it's set up, but strength comes in many different forms. And nowadays, as a society, at least currently, we'll see how it goes soon, but it's obvious that based on the way that they're casting and based on the way that the game is played, that strength is seen beyond just the physical providing. Strength is seen in your emotional bonds. And that was definitely the way that it was always, at least in the older season. Survivor has evolved in a way as a show towards, you know, emotional strength rather than physical strength.
Especially with the food distribution being different, it being shorter. I do think that also goes to it as well, because it's not necessarily like, okay, you came in here with like all this muscle. That muscle is going to keep you going for the rest of, you know, this time. Whereas now it's like, okay, it's a shorter time. It might not really be as much of a need either to like be able to win these challenges.
Sure, you could use them for certain things, especially in the pre-merge, right? But like, look at a Kyle. He never struck me as like the huge provider at camp anyway. Maybe he was, but that felt more like a TK or a Gabe. And even Tiana, honestly. Kyle, maybe it's just because he's so skinny. He is a big guy. You know, the second we all felt that the man loses in the merge, and he did get by one where he lost, but he won four of the five cycles after the merge that he was safe. I think that had he not won, he would have been gone a lot sooner. And I think that's the fatal flaw in the game. And maybe it always has been, but it's that much more evident. Is like, if you make yourself a threat, either socially or physically at the beginning, you're gone. And it doesn't lend itself currently to shrewd or strong players making it that far. It lends itself to being in the middle of the best, which is its own skill. And there's nothing wrong with that. But I think it takes away from the quality of our winners at times.
I totally get what you're saying, but I also kind of think of it as like, I mean, this is just how the game has progressed. When Kyle was winning all these, and I was such a Kyle fan, obviously, because he's winning all these things. But I was like, dude, why is he winning so much? Like, at this point, now you have to win every single one. You shot yourself in the foot being so dominant, right? That's also part of the strategy. Like, Jeff definitely puts it as like, you know, never give up on Survivor. And as viewers, obviously, we don't want to be sitting there watching people like blatantly give up, which we've heard characters in the past be like, you know, I want to throw this so we can get this guy out. I think overwhelmingly people are just like, we don't like that. At the same time, it does kind of put it on those stronger players. Am I going to try and build my resume from the very beginning and be this super strong player? And I have a target on my back, but I'm going to show people how I maneuver through this with a target on my back. Or am I going to really like design my gameplay as I'm going to take a back seat? Sure, I might be able to win this challenge, but maybe I balance it out a little bit more and not put as much of a target. Because I didn't think Kyle was very social either. I feel like he was talking to Andy that one day, and I'm like, you are letting the floodgates open. You know, you got to be a little bit more diligent about what's going on. And he was like, you know, bonding with Andy and kind of having a good time as if like he was out at a bar. You're on Survivor. I have to think about that.
Well, to your larger point, you definitely want to strike a balance. And Kyle, if he had just won the first one, for example, let's just use him. I don't know that it necessarily would have been like, oh, we have to get Kyle out, because he's not as obvious of a physical threat as some of these other huge buff guys. The minute he won the second one, I think it was like, okay, now you're screwed. Because to your point about him talking to Andy, he obviously was not the social player. He had trouble with that from the beginning. He had his people he wanted to be loyal to, but he had trouble ingratiating himself. And I'm sure on some level he sensed that, which probably led to him feeling like that much more like, I have to go win. And generally not a great strategy, but especially considering he came really close in this past challenge to winning. He was a few seconds away. I think he might have been able to do it. I think
he
might have been able to like potentially comp his way to the finals if he had just won this one. Now, obviously, if you believe Andy's math, which they did not,
oh my gosh, Andy.
What a character. Andy is a character. If you believe his math, then it seemed unlikely. And I think overall, yeah, it's still unlikely. But there were only, what, 7, 6, 5, 4? There's only 4 more immunity challenges after this one. And then the last one is like, if you don't win it, you have another shot at fire. And then look at his competition out there physically. Andy can't win anything. Sam has not won and immunity. He's performed well in reward challenges, but not in individual, really. Sue is actually probably...
I was about to say, Sue is actually kind of like... I mean, I was really shocked. Like, one of the first challenges. I don't remember what it was, but it was definitely like an Outlast, like stamina type of challenge. And I was like, wow, she is like looking good. And I haven't really been the biggest Sue fan. Yeah, Sue's been doing great. You know, Rachel also, if there is a puzzle, she is just going to like dominate. That girl is crazy with those puzzles.
There have not been that many puzzles since the beginning of the pre-version. Once there is, to your point, she will dominate. Talk about Genevieve for a second here. She's now survived two cycles after her giant play against Saul. And I still think she's going to be a big threat out there. I think people know it. And there's an alliance now that does not include her. Mm-hmm. What odds would you put her at to survive this next episode, assuming she doesn't win immunity?
You know, I think her odds are pretty high, honestly. And the reason I think that is because of, yeah, Genevieve's name's kind of been thrown out there, but she hasn't done anything the last couple of weeks. Yeah, everyone's like still thinking about her big move with Saul and everything. But again, it's kind of washed into the background a little bit. And while her name is still out there, I do feel like with her kind of stepping back a little bit and her definitely realizing she's on the bottom, not trying too hard to orchestrate anything else, I think that will play in her benefit. And I think she's pretty smart. I think she's going to be able to figure out a way to sneak into some little crack somewhere, make another vote, kind of swing a different direction. But maybe this time it's not going to be her like leading it. I think she did kind of realize, okay, yay, I have this on my resume, but it is just so outwardly me, you know, going after it so hard that it was like so clear. And I think she could have played that a little bit better. I think she's learned from that, though. So next time, I think she will try to be a little bit sneakier.
You see Gabe going, you see Kyle going. Besides Sue, who I think they're underestimating because she's shown to be pretty much the biggest immunity threat that's left in the game at this point.
Yeah.
Obviously, Sam is the one bigger physical threat who's left. And so outside of that alliance of five, it's either Genevieve or Sam, if that's who's able to stay together. So do you think Genevieve sort of serve Sam up on a platter? Or do you think she tries, as you said, to find some cracks within the five? And if so, who do you think is her target this time?
You know, I do think she'll kind of go after Sam. I think she has somewhat had like made connections with the other people. I don't think she really has done that with Sam. So I think it'll be harder for her to really like get him to be behind her. And I think Sam has also been, I mean, since Sierra left, honestly, like he's been so low on the totem pole. He's really trying to make a big move and really trying to get things to kind of go more his way. And I don't think she's going to really want to be too involved with just following him. Like, I don't think that's her personality necessarily. But yeah, I don't know. I just don't see them working well together or meshing together.
No, they have their own agendas for sure. I mean, even look at the Saul vote out. I don't think Sam necessarily knew that was Genevieve driving it, but
I don't think he knew what was going on. He was just like, I just need to figure it out.
That's the best he could possibly do. I think with Sam, to pivot to him for a second, the vibe I get is I don't think that they respect his social game out there. They like him as a person. And I think if he does manage to find his way to the end, unless he goes on an immunity streak or makes some kind of unprecedented move, he's going to have a hard time convincing people. But he is trying to play his own game. He is trying to enforce his own things. I just don't think anybody really wants to hear it. My question about Genevieve is, let's say she gets to the final three. Currently, we're seeing this edit of her being initially this ice queen, and then now she's melting a little bit. And it seems pretty genuine. And so if she gets to the final three, do you think that story works for her with a jury? The fact that she's melting, and do you think people will say, no, you needed to own the moves you made? Or do you think people like that she has this growing empathy and say that's what we wanted out there, a transformation?
I don't think people are going to want that transformation. I think the reason, though, is just because of the way she went about that first move with Saul. Because in my brain, I was also like, why Saul? Saul definitely was making connections, especially after Rome went out. Good for him. She was just like, this is a vote that I can get him out. Really going so gung-ho for it. And in that same time, betraying Teenie's trust, you really threw Teenie under. And when you break something like that so early on, especially, it's kind of hard to be like, okay, great, you change throughout the game. But I think like Andy's transformation from the beginning to now is a bigger, if he were to make it to the end, like showed so much growth from your first breakdown to now really like getting to know all these people.
her only recourse now is to slink and make herself less of a threat, which I don't think benefits her end game. And Andy, when he went to tribal this past episode, I don't know if you remember this, I was very unimpressed for the first time with the way he was speaking in front of everybody, because despite all of his errors and fumbling ways up until recently, he's always been featured as a very eloquent and a very like impassioned speaker, either before competitions or at tribal in front of people. He's getting a huge edit in the confessionals, obviously. But what he was saying to the jury this past time, I did not feel like that was smart. He was basically saying, yeah, let's not sugarcoat it. I lied to all these people out here. And when he's saying it, he doesn't like show a lot of empathy. You know, it's one thing to admit it, because ultimately that's something that everybody's doing on some level. But he's just sort of doing like the game bot, lack of empathy about it. And I think people on the jury can read that. I think a lot of them feel betrayed by him, especially like Sierra, who it feels like she's going to have a lot of influence on that jury, being the queen of Ponderosa. His winner chances from just this past episode plummeted a little bit.
I mean, even before he like told everybody at this tribal, like, yeah, I lied to all of you, I was like, ooh, he's talking to a lot of people. It's one thing to talk to a lot of people. It's another thing to be like, you're my ride or die. I'm taking you to the end. This is gonna come out at some point. You're not the only one talking to people. Like, if you're gonna say one thing to one person, another thing to another person, those two people get together and they're like, well, Andy said this to me. Well, you know, it's going to come out. And as that starts unraveling, yeah, I don't think it's going to go well.
Yeah. And I think he's got a great story within the game, but yeah. I think people are going to, like you said, put the pieces together. And if he gets to that final tribal council, which I think he will, he's going to have a tough time answering those questions in an empathetic way.
Yeah. He's very calculated.
He's very calculated. He's going to come off as a game bot.
Yeah.
And people don't want to reward a game bot at the end if they can't fake at that point that those bonds were true. And I don't think these bonds are true for him. And I think it's going to be hard to sell that point. And there was a comment in the episode where I forget exactly who, I think it was Rachel saying it to Andy. There's a lot of talk of Andy and Sue being shepherded to the end. And we've seen Andy say he wants to work with Sue specifically, which, you know, he said he wants to work with everybody, but that was more of an isolated one from the others. We've seen Sue and Caroline say, I want to get to the end with you. I'm a big advocate of reading the edit. The edit misleads you a lot of times, but I think ultimately, more times than not, the edit will tell you where the game is going. It feels like some variation of an Andy, Sue, Caroline, or an Andy, Sue, Teeny final three, which is a very interesting group of people. If Rachel gets there, she wins, but it just feels like to me that whether it's Caroline or maybe she goes out in fire even, that she just doesn't quite get there. I don't know why. It's just been a gut feeling the whole time. Well, that leads right into you can't have a conversation with Flip about Survivor without talking about your winner picks. And then after that, tell me who cannot win, regardless of the seven left.
I really think Rachel's going to win. We all see the game she's playing, but I really think that if you were on that island with them and you're playing the game, I think she's doing a great job with hiding all of the things that she has, and also all of the little connections she has with people. I mean, she hasn't brought herself on super strong to anybody necessarily, but I think she's done a good job with making those smaller connections to the point where it's not like, oh, is this person deceiving me? It's like, oh, okay, yeah, I do have like a little connection with building little bits of trust at a time.
I think she will be able to explain her game. I think people already know she's been in the thick of things and they're still just like, sure, let's let you be in the thick of things.
Yeah.
It's a little bit too late to bank on getting somebody out when there's so few left. And they don't even know she's got the idol.
So exactly.
As long as she makes it to five, all she has to do is win one of two competitions to get to the end and win. That's it. So I think the odds are really in her favor. So with that being said, who is your can't win pick?
I think it's Sam. Caroline, like, I do think that she might have to do a little bit more, but there's still time left when I do think she will start picking up her game a little bit more. But yeah, I think Sam, at the beginning, I really feel that thing with him and Sierra. Sierra really was like the one that was making those bigger connections to other people and orchestrating a lot of things. And he kind of fell under that umbrella. And as soon as she was gone, man, like he was all over the place. He didn't know what was going on. And like Rachel told him one thing and he just blew up that spot right away. And I'm like, that was kind of a way for you to start at least getting yourself back into some kind of group. I feel like he wants to play a really good game, but I just feel that the way that he goes about talking to people and maybe how to orchestrate things is not...
It doesn't work with this group of people.
Yeah.
Him not having Sierra, huge loss. He wanted to go after Sue. He's got good ideas.
It's about how he's trying to implement them. It's not working out well. I think if he put a little bit more time into like gaining Teenie's trust, like that's the other thing. I don't think he's put enough time into really like making the connections where he would be able to start implementing some of the moves that he wants to make.
Specifically with this group of people, you know, Sam, he's a good guy, but he is this bro-y, you know, sports. I think that doesn't lend itself well to this group of people. That doesn't mean that he can't connect or that they can't connect to him, but it's a big adjustment when you're one way and everybody else is another way to really try to gain their trust. And the way that he goes about things may not be the way that other people go about things. On a different season, he might have more of a chance. This is just not his group to gain their trust and respect in a game sense.
Even if there were just like maybe some more guys left in the game, he might be able to bro out with them a little bit more and like make better connections, make a bigger group. But yeah, wasn't this season.
No, and that, I think this season less than even other ones in the new era that's happened. We've been talking about it on the podcast. This has felt since even pre-merge a very female led season. And I think in Survivor, you've specifically seen that trend more and more, especially in the new era. And so I think Sam probably benefits more in an older season. There were no other bro-y guys on his tribe. There were no bro-y guys at all on Lavo. Tuku had TK. I don't even know if you could really call... Kyle's not so much bro-ish, but I think he tends to... Yeah, he leans more that way. He obviously linked up with TK. Gabe, I think he is that way, but he didn't even want to be that, which I think was smart. So really, outside of Sam... there was like TK essentially was the other obvious bro-y guy in the game. There just wasn't a lot of people
that
were going to have his similar like athletic sports, like competitive mindset in that specific way. He always was going to have to play an adjusted game, and Sierra was able to help him do that. And once she was gone, it was like,
yeah,
but I agree with you. I don't think he can win either. I think there's a path for him to get to the end. I like to do one surprise question at the end before we go. So
All right. You
are a teacher. What grade do you teach currently?
5th grade.
Okay. So my question is, what quality as a 5th grade teacher do you think would most benefit you out on the island? I think I know what the answer probably is, but I want to hear it from you. So imagine you're out there, you're used to dealing with like 5 classrooms of Rome's every day, right? 100 Rome's.
My kids are better than Rome. Don't put them in that category.
I'm sorry to the children of Tariq's 5th grade classes. I should have known. He's probably more 2nd or 3rd grade, right?
Probably, yeah.
So yeah, dealing with, you know, 10-year-olds on a daily basis, what is the one overarching quality that would help you the most in the game?
Adaptability.
Okay, that's not what I thought that you would have said, but that makes a lot of sense too.
What were you thinking?
Patience.
Okay, I will say I, for a teacher, probably should have a higher scale of patience. And yeah, if you ever meet any of my 5th graders, they will tell you like, yeah, Miss Chowdhury, she does not have the patience for her.
And honestly, in a new era, that probably plays better than it would have been in an old era. I think the patience isn't as much of a virtue out in a 26-day game. But you said adaptability. What aspect of adaptability? Because that's a broad term.
I think about how like every year we have, you know, whatever our class is given to us. We don't choose our kids. We just have the class, and we really do have to kind of get to know them quickly. And you're supposed to build these relationships with all 28 of these kids. And the way you teach certain kids is different based off of who they are. The way that you discipline kids is different based off of who they are. Like, you know, certain things work with certain kids. I'm adapting all day long, right? Like, no matter how I'm speaking to kids, no matter how I'm teaching them, disciplining them, when they have conflict with each other, the type of advice I give them, even the wording I use, it's all different. And I think that really kind of goes into, especially like a social game, you get to know all these people, you have to get to know them really fast, and you have to kind of figure out what's the best way to communicate with this person? What's the best way to like get this person on my side and like get this person to trust me? In the first couple weeks of school, that's all you do, is getting these kids to feel they're in a place where they can trust the person that they're going to be with the rest of that year, and that, you know, they're comfortable around them and they feel safe. And I feel like if you can build that with multiple personality types, multiple, like all these different types of people, you can do it with 10-year-olds, you know, they're brutal. That's a skill that is almost like copy and paste it into Survivor. That's what you do.
From the handful of times that I've spent time with you, whenever you come up in conversations with our friends, I'm like, oh, yeah, Tareen's great, right? Like, we haven't talked in years, but when Gloria offered you up as a Survivor podcast guest, I was like, oh, yeah, easy. And I think that lends itself to speaking about, yeah, you're easily trusted, and you have to be that way with children. You have to be that way in your profession. Not all teachers are like that. That's for sure. That's for damn sure. There are a lot of teachers out there who nobody likes. And
yeah,
pretty, like you said, like the first 2 weeks, man, it's immediate. Like if you make a bad impression in general as a person, it's hard to overcome. If you make a bad impression with children, that is so much harder to overcome. Yeah. So no, I would see you doing really well out there. I would see you, the person that you wouldn't want out there is a Genevieve, because a Genevieve would sniff you out. You don't want a shrewd tactical observer out there, because that's where you would get in trouble. But if you can befriend that tactical observer, like for real, then you're golden out there. Yeah. There have been at least a couple, there's obviously 47 seasons now, but I can think specifically of a couple teachers who have won. I think anytime you see somebody out there with that profession, they're always a good bet to go far.
When you deal with that many kids and it's so many, it's not just the kids, right? Like it's their parents. It's like all the other staff members. And I work at like a gigantic elementary school. Like it's huge. I don't even know everybody that works at my school. It's huge. There's also so much turnover. There's new people coming in all the time. And yeah, it's like, you just have to adapt. There's always changes being thrown at you. But yeah, if you were to be put in a situation like Survivor, I mean, it could definitely be such a benefit. And I mean, my boyfriend has said that so many times, like, oh, you do great on Survivor. Like, I could see you in this game. And like, I'd like to think that I do well, but sometimes I just think, man, I just get hangry. People wouldn't like me.
I'm sure everybody's hangry out there. I'm sure you surely wouldn't be the only one. Let me put it this way. The player that I think I would be out there, I know that like you would be the person that I would try to work with. I'm pretty solid with people, but I think of myself more as like, you know, like the strategist, like the shrewd, like I will take you out. And you would be the person that I would want to have by my side who does the social dirty work.
I'd be like, okay, like, I know that's what you want, but like, just keep it low key for a minute. Let's like talk to these people and like.
Oh, no, I'm good. Look what I'm doing. I'm good at talking to people, man. I'm good at talking to people. My intentions are malicious. No, I'm just kidding. I'm good at fishing things out of people, and you're good at controlling a room. That's a dangerous combination. I just know that I would want the person who, without having to fish anybody out, has people trust them by my side, and like we do damage together. I can just see that and feel that, like not even from knowing you that well. I just know.
Let's do it.
And that speaks to your game, because you'd have me wrapped around and you could get me out whenever you want. The player like you is my kryptonite, 100%.
Be like, yeah, you can trust me.
Sure. I'd have no choice. Nobody else would. Tareen, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for having me. This is awesome.
Hi, I'm Flip, the host of Flippers Always Win. As previously mentioned, we have no sponsorships on this podcast. So in lieu of an ad, I would like to talk to you about the Christmas decorations in our apartment. Now, I did not grow up celebrating Christmas ever. Julia did. So the other day she brought out the tree. Oh, look at the tree. Look at the tree. She brought out a smaller tree. She brought out a bunch of Christmas lights, and she did a great job. Our apartment looks beautiful. It's festive. It's not overwhelming. It's not over the top. Nothing wrong with that. I saw in a clip that Sue likes to have like 6 Christmas trees in her house each year, to each their own. But this is a really nice first ever dipping my toe into the Christmas water, not the holy water, the Christmas water. There is a difference, so to speak. I'm happy with the way our apartment looks. We're a few weeks away from the holidays, but I hope you're all getting festive and ready for some merriment or whatever all you guys say. The Christmas decorations, they're up. Well, she took a week off to go home, be with family for Thanksgiving, but she's back braving the cold in a less cold place. We're happy to have you back on the pod, Julia. How's it going?
Thanks, Flip. I'm happy to be back.
How was your time at home?
Cold. Good. Good to see Doug. Shout out, Doug. my sisters, my family. It was a good time.
Yep. And Doug, your dad, has now started calling me Flip pretty much all the time because he listens to the pod, even though he's not a Survivor fan, never watched an episode. But he's asking you in regular conversation, how's Flip? What's Flip up to?
Yes. Yes. He is your number one fan.
Well, Avery's my number one fan. And I got some other friends that are, shout out Jessica, shout out Gloria, shout out Scott. I don't even know who you are. You listen to every episode, but Doug's up there. There's like a top five. Like was it the AT&T commercials or was it the who's in your five? Remember that? Those phone commercials from like the 2010s, the early 2010s.
Oh, where you had like unlimited calling to five numbers or something.
Yeah. Only five though. You had to pick a five. Which plan was that?
I have no idea. Very exclusive though.
Yeah. I think that was the same, whatever company it was the same one that had the My BFF Jill, My BFF Rose.
This is riveting stuff.
It absolutely is. Well, now that we've gotten done with our fun banter.
Yeah.
We'll just jump right into this week's deep dive, which is no longer the social media deep dive, by the way. Julia, about 15 minutes before we started here, what'd you say to me?
Well, I said for next season. I didn't say starting now. I said next season, I want to change my segment to be not just a social media deep dive, but basically do a profile on one player each week and, you know, incorporate their social media into that, but also just really analyze them and their gameplay as a whole.
Which I do feel like that's been sort of trending towards what we've been doing lately. It started with Gabe when you took him to town, and then Saul, we ventured outside of, I guess you can count LinkedIn as social media. Mm-hmm. But I feel like the last third of the season that we've been doing this so far, it's already been going to that territory. Yeah, we don't have to wait till next season. We can just edit this right now and change it up. From now on, it is not the social media deep dive. It is the deep dive based upon social media. It is in Wicked when Glinda announces that she will no longer be going by Galinda. And she is now Glinda.
Sure.
That was the first we saw it last night. I thought that's very similar to what you're asking.
You've been wanting to throw in a Wicked reference ever since we got out of that movie theater, haven't you?
I mean, that was all I could think about. I was like, what part of this movie can I reference for episode 11 of Flippers Always Win? So we're going to do something actually a little different in all seriousness here. The first however many times you've done this, we have done the social media deep dive, now the deep dive based on social media, based on a player who was still in the game. And actually, the very first episode, you had said that your prediction for the following week, who you would do would be Sierra. We didn't get around to it. Things changed. Sierra's out of the game. But Sierra was the first person on the jury. She was a very socially capable player. And I believe, based on what I've seen on social media and just thinking about it a little bit, she will have a lot of influence on that jury. She's been there the longest. She has good relationships. People like her. And then she's sort of the queen of Ponderosa. So what we're going to do this time is we're going to do a social media deep dive on Sierra, and we're going to talk about how we think it affects the outcome of the game. So without further ado, take it away.
Yeah, so I wanted to cover Sierra right off the bat. The second I saw Sierra on the screen, first episode, I said, that girl's a nurse. I knew that she was the nurse. There's always a nurse contestant, and I knew it was her. And being a nurse, I can recognize a nurse, and that girl's a nurse.
I think you said almost this exact same diatribe.
I'd just like to say a little bit about Sierra's job as a nurse. I did some digging on what kind of nurse she is. I was curious. And I saw that she currently works for a plastic surgery office in their PACU, post-anesthesia, post-procedure nurse. And she previously worked in an ICU. And so that tells me she is my favorite type of nurse. She is similar to a path that I took, where she is smart enough to be an ICU nurse. ICU nurses are some of the most analytical nurses in the field. But she is even smarter in the fact that She knows she doesn't have to work that hard. She does not have to deal with the bullshit of working in the hospital with the hours, with the night shift, all of that. And she went and took an outpatient, a little bit of a cushier job. I'm sure that her job is hard, still taxing. You know, the outpatient world isn't all rainbows and butterflies. But she took that leap to plastics. And I think that's great. That tells me that she puts herself and her needs and her priorities at kind of the forefront of her decision making. And I think that's awesome. And shout out to you, Sierra. I think that's really great. I hope you're happy at your job. And if you have any discounts, let me know because I would like to take advantage of that.
To your point, while she was in the game, she made decisions ultimately based off of logic and not emotion. Sometimes with the Annika vote versus keeping Andy, the numbers were sort of stacked against her. So that may have been out of more force. But she seemed like she was playing as logical of a game as you could in a pretty tough position to be in the middle of the tribe. So she had everybody on her side. She was playing logically. She wasn't having breakdowns, meltdowns, or anything like that. And when she got voted out of the game, she definitely was pissed. But she kept a pretty stoic face and she kept it together. And look, as somebody who is living with a nurse, if there's one thing I know is that if you're a nurse, you got to be able to keep it together. And she is very well put together in that regard. Again, another reason why I think she was viewed as a threat out there is because she's pretty much the whole package.
I agree. You know, based on her coverage, her edit, her social media presentation of herself, she seems like someone I would get along with. She seems like someone that I would like in the real world, someone that, you know, I would vibe well with. And so I was really, you know, interested in diving deeper into, you know, her and analyze her game a little bit. Her social media, first of all, she just got engaged this week.
To Sam.
No, not to Sam. Okay. Sam is engaged to someone else. We already know that.
Okay.
She got engaged to someone named Justin. So congratulations, Sierra and Justin.
Congratulations.
Very beautiful, very lovely photos.
Does it say where they got engaged?
No, it does not. But it looks cold. So
they are in layers.
They are in layers.
It's very beautiful. Regardless, it's very beautiful. It's a nice place to get engaged at.
Yeah, it's very picturesque. Very beautiful.
Yeah.
Very nice. Good for them. Rings beautiful. Good job.
Yeah.
Good job, Justin.
Good job, Justin.
Shout out, Justin. And most of her social media currently is about Survivor. Just like a lot of the contestants that we have covered. Even though she is on the jury, she's still posting pretty regularly, which I like. I appreciate. I feel like it would be easy just to fall off. I think that speaks to exactly what you were saying, her involvement in the jury, her involvement in this game. She's still, you know, dedicated to this game. And I think that she really wants a hand in the outcome.
And she will have it. She will have it with her vote. She will have it with her influence. You know, the longer that you're on the jury, the more time you've had to simmer and you really want to speak up. And I think that she was never one to back down to begin with.
Yeah, I agree. I think that she is well-spoken. Something that I learned from her social media is that she was in pageants. She was Miss Delaware.
Which I think that was mentioned in the very first episode of the season that she was Miss Delaware in the opening sequence where they're saying everything about everybody's life that you're supposed to remember for the rest of the season.
Well, you know, I have the memory of a goldfish when it comes to anything. So I
didn't remember this before you told me either. Yeah. So she was Miss Delaware.
Yes. Fun fact, shout out to all of my Bachelor fans out there. She competed with both Hannah Brown and Kaylin in the Miss USA pageant. And those were both contestants on, I don't remember whose season of The Bachelor. And then Hannah Brown went on to be The Bachelorette. And so that is a very fun little tying of worlds.
And there's another tying of worlds that's been going on with Sierra lately on the internet. And I don't know anything about this. And you also don't really know too much about this, right?
Well, I didn't know it was a thing until you sent it to me.
Yeah, and I had no idea about any of it. But so, you know, I'm on Twitter more. Julie's on Instagram more. On Twitter this week, Mike Bloom, who is, you know, if you're on the Survivor Twitter, you've seen him, you know him. He's a big contributor to the discourse. He essentially posted the news that every year is, I don't even know how you describe it. There is a Halloween costume.
It's a Sally costume from Nightmare Before Christmas.
It is a Sally costume from Nightmare Before Christmas, as I'm being told.
Which you've probably never seen.
Which I've never seen, as I'm being told.
Have you ever seen that movie?
So anyway, so it's so it's Premium Sally. And apparently for the last few years now, every year on Halloween, this product comes out and people are saying that a YouTuber named Tana Mongeau. I am out of the culture. I don't know. Tana Mongeau, people are saying every year, this must be the person who did the modeling for Premium Sally.
At Spirit Halloween.
And it's not Tana Mongeau, but...
But they do look a lot alike looking at these, because... So that's Tana.
Yeah.
And that's the packaging.
That's the packaging. So anyways, this has been going on for a few years now. Apparently... The person who actually did the modeling for Premium Sally is none other than Sierra Wright. And I don't know how many times this season, I can't think of specific examples at this very moment. Just everything these days seems to tie back to Survivor one way or another. And this is just another example of it. Just how did that happen? How are we here now? But we are. Sierra is Premium Sally. Go figure. So... She's all over the place. She's got a lot going on. She is a nurse. She was in Miss USA with Bachelorette contestants, a Bachelorette winner. She's Premium Sally. She's the first member of the jury. And she's hot stuff.
She's everywhere. She is everywhere. She also, on her social media, she was also a model for a Cruella de Vil Spirit Halloween costume, which is very fun. I mean, she's very beautiful. She's clearly does some modeling. So good for her.
Yeah.
Get that bag, girl.
She is everything everywhere all at once.
She is.
Embodied. And you know what? At the time when she got voted out, it felt like a little, I understood the move. I mean, she's definitely a social threat out there, but it did feel like it came out of left field a little bit at the time.
Well, I think people were really threatened by her and Sam together. And I think that elimination really changed the trajectory of the game quite a bit, because now people aren't really threatened by Sam anymore. They seem to not really care that he's in the game. He's on their list of people to get out, but he's not the top threat. No one's worried about him socially. He's tried to make plays here and there. Nothing's really panned out. And I think Sierra, if she were still in the game, they would be running things.
And it would benefit her too, because at that point, if she was still in, I think Sam would have become potentially more of the target at that point, because the longer that somebody like him goes into the game and has at least the illusion of power, the more of a threat they truly are to win.
Right.
But without her, he's got nothing. And I guess the whole point was, you know, at the time it felt like, okay, sure, Sierra, let's, you know, whatever, get her out. Now that I understand a little bit more about her background of, she's been a lot of places, done a lot of things. She's intelligent. She's beautiful. She's competitive. She's everywhere. She's Premium Sally. I can understand how if she sort of exudes that sort of power and confidence and air about her out there, why she was the initial target when they first got to the jury phase. I can understand why some people might have been threatened by just the aura that she gives off.
Oh, 100%. I mean, think about the skills you have to be in pageants. You have to be eloquent. You have to be likable. You have to be able to schmooze people. Those are all things that make you a huge social threat.
Yeah.
And think about if she were to get to final three, how she would be able to appeal to the jury. I bet she has a great elevator pitch. You know,
yeah.
I bet that she would win based on what she would be able to say to the jury. And then think about what you need to have to be a nurse. You know, she's caring. She's smart. She's analytical. Those are all things that made her a huge threat.
And I think all those qualities that you just described that would have benefited her as she got into the end will impact the game ultimately at the end from the other side of it. I think it would be unfortunate for the game if Sam was in the final three, only because I think you might see Sierra vouch for him where he's not going to win. And I think that puts her in a little bit of a between a rock and a hard place. I think it would be much more entertaining and her influence could be more broadly felt if Sam's on the jury. So she doesn't have to sort of play that sort of, oh, I want to vouch for you, but I also know that you're not really deserving here. Do you think that if Sam's on the end there, that she's going to put her entire, you know, power into advocating for him?
No, I don't. I think that Sierra is smart. She's been sitting on this jury the longest. And so she has gotten to watch everything and she's watched that Sam isn't really doing a ton. And I think that Sierra, being a fan of Survivor and being invested in the game, wants the most deserving person to win. I don't think she would just vote for Sam because he was her best friend out there, her closest ally. Yeah. I think that is important to her, but I think she wants the best player to win. And if she doesn't think that that's Sam, then she's not going to vote for Sam and she's not going to vouch for Sam to the jury, especially because she was voted out first. She has time to kind of process that and recover from that and not hold grudges. She might be a little bit spiteful in who she votes for. But I think the longer you're on the jury, the more likely you are to vote for the most deserving versus your closest friend.
Yeah, I think most of the time I would imagine that's correct. I think if you have a certain type of person who their default is to harbor resentment anyway, regardless of Survivor, you might get the opposite. And that may just, the longer they're there, the more fuming they get. But I think a more rational, which it seems like she is, fan of the game will have more time to decompress and make that assessment rather than somebody who gets voted out the night before. And whether or not their ally was really the best player, they're just going to throw their vote to them because it's so raw.
If she were to be dramatic and be vengeful about anyone, it would be targeted towards Andy.
And I don't think she'll be alone in that.
I agree.
Yeah. So we also do a celebrity comparison, of course, every week to the person that we are doing our deep dive on based off of social media. And so you've thought of somebody who you have said is a little bit niche.
Yeah, I'm not sure how many people are going to get this reference. I know you will, Flip. She is a influencer of sorts. TikTok.
Is it Pookie?
It's not Pookie. Well,
then I'm out. I don't know any other TikTok influencers. I think that's the only one I know.
You would not know her from her influencer videos. You would know her from a comedy song. And I'll give you a hint specifically that no one else will get this reference, but it ties into my fantasy football team name last year.
Last year, not this one.
No.
What was your team name last year?
That's going to give it away. I'll give you a hint.
Was there a player that it was named after? Yes. What was the player?
Tyler Bass.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. So it was Planet of the Bass, which of course, if you all remember, Kyle Gordon is the name of the guy who came up with that Planet of the Bass song. All of the dream. What does it mean? And she does look like that girl. She looks just like that girl. She looks like that girl.
Audrey. She's a comedian on TikTok.
And she's very good at singing and dancing and pretending to be a 90s Europop star.
Yes. And
life, it's never die. Women are my favorite guy.
Her name's Audrey Trulinger.
Audrey Trulinger. I think they have similar eyes. I think it's the eyes that I see some. I see what you're saying. I don't think it's wrong at all. We have seemed to have some differing opinions on who people look like in this portion.
Well,
and I think that they look somewhat similar.
I think they look very similar.
I know. I know you do. And I'm not going to bring up the comparison that you made for Gabe to Adrian Grenier. I'm not going to bring it up.
I know. People didn't like that one.
No, I literally, Chris, if you're listening, shout out Chris. He specifically messaged me because I think that was his episode. He was like, your girlfriend's wild for that Adrian Grenier comparison.
Yeah, that one was a little bit out of pocket. But
this one's closer. This one's a lot closer. Do I believe that she looks as much like Audrey Trulinger? No. Do I see some similarities? Absolutely.
Good. I'm glad.
One other thing on Sierra. Sierra, I understand from your story that you are a Philadelphia Eagles fan. And as a Baltimore Ravens fan who just got done watching that game, I know you were at that game. I would like to say nothing good. I'd like to say nothing good to you. How about that, Sierra? Yeah.
I'm sure she is so offended, shaking in her boots.
Uh-oh.
As a Buffalo Bills fan, Sierra, I'd like to say maybe see you at the Super Bowl.
I'd like to say see you at the Super Bowl. My name is Julia. Yeah, I'm a Bills fan. We lost to the Ravens by 28 points. Bam, bam, bam.
Okay. First of all, jail.
Jail. They do have a jail underneath the Eagles Stadium, right, Sierra? And that is a wrap on episode 11 of Flippers Always Win. Thank you so much to Tareen for coming on and sharing her survivor story and breaking down the episode with me. Thanks again to Julia for her deep dive based upon social media. We will be back next week, episode 12. This is going to be the last episode of the season of Survivor where only one person gets voted out. So we're approaching the end rapidly, getting down to that nitty gritty. Going to be a fun ending. I'm pumped. Hope you are too. Signing off for now, I am Flip. And if I had a tagline, you already know that I would say it right now.